You're listening to Dose of Depth podcast. I'm your host, Deborah Lukovich, and I invite you to be curious about your unique experience of being human. In this podcast, we'll explore the deeper meaning of ordinary life experiences through conversation, stories, and education. You might have a serious aha moment, or you might just be amused by the movie your life seems to be imitating, or you might just be entertained by one of my awkward stories. I'm hoping you'll become more aware of those moments when a deeper part of you is prompting you to see things differently and maybe even go a new direction. So let's get started. Today, in this episode, I'm shaking it up in more than one way. First of all, podcast listeners, what's new for me is I'm also sharing this on video. So you don't know that I actually read all my questions from paper, but my YouTubers, you're going to see that I put a lot of thought into my interview. So I actually read my questions off paper. So anyway, today I'm shaking it up in another way. I'm going to be a little less formal and a little more personal. As you know, I'm awkward. I'm a nerdy oversharer who's obsessed about inspiring people to find deeper meaning in ordinary life events. What you don't know is that I'm one of three sisters who are super close in age. We're alike in so many ways. We're friendly and curious about people, and we're also so different. One sister is an extrovert who is talented at acting and singing and could give Martha Stewart a run for her money when it comes to decorating. After her midlife unraveling, she started a new career as a realtor. The other sister, the one with me today, is an amazing fine artist who found her way to the corporate sector that constantly challenges her authenticity when it comes to her personal mission to bring out the best in people. She really walks the walk. Part of her midlife unraveling is realizing this, and now she's written a book about it. And then there's me. I felt overshadowed by both sisters' artistic talent, but I've also always had an entrepreneurial spirit. But not until midlife unraveling would I be able to reconcile powerful opposing forces inside me that unleashed my buried creativity. So even though three sisters were raised by the same parents, we each have lived different manifestations of our mother and father complexes. And one thing we all have in common is this version of not being quite good enough. That plays out in different ways: self-doubt, perfectionism, self-consciousness, fears of not following through. And I got the idea for this conversation when my sister Chris and I were laughing. We were having a conversation and we just all of a sudden were like, I'm always going to be self-conscious and you're always going to have self-doubt. Darn. Even C.G. Jung said that we never really get rid of complexes, those stubborn patterns of thinking and behaving and reacting that developed in childhood to get us to adulthood. We circle around them like my spiral tattoo, and we come into deeper relationship with these difficult parts of ourselves. And as we do that, they do lose power over us and they can become companions so that when they show up, it's like another invitation to find even deeper meaning when it comes to our sense of purpose. So this is such a great way to introduce you to my guest, my sister, Chris Lukovich Schindler, champion of bringing out the best in others and author of her soon to be published first book, Unfinished: Unlock Your Superpowers, Live with Purpose, and Discover Limitless Possibilities. So welcome, sis.
Thanks, sis. It's good to be here.
Yes. Since we're being casual today, why don't you just start with whatever's on your mind when it comes to our sister team? And something that came up for me is, remember that time when we had our own little support group and we were getting together monthly to support each other? So just share your thoughts on sisterhood.
Yeah, I actually forgot about that until you just brought that up. And that brought up a good memory for me. So I don't know, when I think about our sisterhood and our relationship, it takes me back to actually high school when I was a teenager. And our mom, struggled with relationships with her own family. And when we saw that and the hardship that it created for her, the three of us, this is my big memory, the three of us kind of committed to or made a pact that we would always stick with each other, that we'd be committed to our relationship and our sisterhood relationship. And you know, even though we've had our own hardships and our own relationships, that has held true through our lives. So when I think about that, the importance of our relationship and the fact that we are very conscious about that, and that's really special to me. I really appreciate the differences and the similarities between the three of us.
Yes, agreed. Totally agreed.
Yeah.
So I know that during our conversation, you're going to be bringing the ideas in your book to life. But first, was there a moment when you decided you were going to write this book or write a book? And then what was the emotional or the psychological process like to follow through and actually get it to this point?
Oh boy. Yeah. So when I was working in the global corporate world and I did travels, I traveled one and only time to Peru. And I met with our general manager at the time, who his name was Rene Mott, and he made time for me, took me to a coffee shop so that he could learn more about me. Most people at that level don't do that sort of thing. So I really appreciated him. And I really kind of, he was like the grandfather I never had. He was so sweet and very special. Anyway, he sat down with me and he said, you know, I think there's three things everybody should do, every single person should do. And I don't remember two of them, but the one that he said that I remember was everyone should write a book because they have a story to tell. So that put the bug in my ear, or in my brain, I guess, in the bulletin board of my brain. And that was 15 years ago. So it actually took me 15 years before I decided I was ready to write the book. So, wow, talk about pivotal moments. My one and only trip there and this interaction with this gentleman is why I have this book coming out now. And then your other question about the process of writing the book. Well, that's like I don't know if you've heard this saying, Deb, but you know, I've heard that authors like to have written a book more than they'd like to write a book. I don't know if that's true for everybody, but I would say that's true for me. So the process was hard because for me, it's really hard to get what's in my head on paper. And so it was really a growth and experiment in patience for me, and knowing that there's not one way to do this and not everybody. It doesn't have to be easy for everybody. And probably it's not easy for a lot. So I think that was sort of a little bit of torture for me to, you know, be able to get this book down on paper. So, and yeah.
And I think that once you actually do write a book, you learn that most people who start don't even finish. And I think you come to really appreciate the craft more in the people who do write, because it's pretty rare that you're going to make a bunch of money off your first book, but you do it anyway, and you think you're going to, which is one of the things that drives you. But it's probably it's just something you feel like you have to do. And so, you know, then you really appreciate everyone who embarks on the journey and at least tries it.
Well, you're so right, because it's kind of like, wow, I like have had all these experiences. And I think that if I could share them with people, that maybe it would help them, you know, accelerate their sort of understanding who they are and being able to show up in life more authentically sooner, or maybe not, even if it's later in their life. But yeah, it's like you feel you've had these experiences and you think you have something to share with others. So that's kind of the way I thought about it. And the other scary thing is it's like, okay, I'm an author. Like that's kind of weird. Like I'm an artist. Like I would say that about myself, but to say I'm an author is really something I'm coming to terms with. And I even had a friend at one time who said to me, well, why, like, haven't a lot of people written about that? And I said, yeah, but there's only one me. So in my own, you know, sort of unfinished journey, I'm learning that everybody has their own voice and their own experience. And even if we have two of the same exact experiences, the other person is not mine. It's still going to be two different experiences. So that was kind of a learning for me too.
Well, and if you think about it, remember when the book The Secret came out?
Yeah.
If you had already been sort of a spiritual thinker, the ideas in that book don't belong to her. In fact, the way the book was even really written, it just highlighted all the wisdom of so many other people. And it was just the way that she wrote it that resonated with people that those ideas hadn't resonated with in the past. So when you say that, yes, have a lot of people written about self-doubt? Probably, but they haven't had your experience of self-doubt or your insights about how to navigate self-doubt.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And if at the very least it can help people recognize their own and ways mm-hmm. to sort of know it's there, but be able to manage mm-hmm. it, like yeah. that's meaningful.
Yes. So let's start with what maybe is the hardest part, but critical in achieving the promise in your subtitle, Unlock Your Superpowers, Live with Purpose and Discover Limitless Possibilities. What's the requirement to get all this? You say that it is accepting that your life is never finished. Tell us about the moment you embraced your life as unfinished. What was the tipping point, the thing or the event that forced you to stop resisting something and surrender and open up to this idea? And then what was the first reward that you got that sort of affirmed that, yep, this is affirming that I do indeed need to accept my life as unfinished?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I do like offer this personal story in my book too, because I think that is pivotal. And I talk about a lot of pivotal moments. And when my husband and I were young and we were married and we were thinking about kids, I read something that said, you know, if you don't resolve your issues before you have a kid, you're going to just pass them along to yours. And I was like, oh my God, my poor kid. I was thinking my poor kid's going to have a lot of issues. So that actually prompted me to go seek a therapist at the time to start like thinking about, because everybody's got some baggage that they're carrying. Right. And so I just wanted to be kind of aware of that. And so when I was at the therapist, and that wasn't like, you didn't tell people you did that much at that point in time. You know, I told her, I said, you know, I felt like my 20s, because I was about 30 at this time. And I felt like in my 20s, I had done all this growing and I've done all that. I've had this hardship and I was trying to figure out who I was. And I thought, well, I'm 30 now, like I should be done with that. and I really thought that I was like, this can't be my life. Right. And so anyway, she had said to me, she's like, well, you're never done. And I was like, so I was, I was like, dang it, I'm never done. So this is going to be my life. So I wasn't like super happy about that. You know, and so I learned, I would say in the past, like probably 5-6 years ago, right, when I get closer to midlife, I'm like, oh, that's a really good thing. Like, it's a good thing not to be done in your life, because who wants to be done, right? Like, there's a reason they say rest in peace when you're no longer on this earth, right? So yeah, so that was one moment. And then there was another moment where I woke up one day and I went to the bathroom because I wasn't very happy in my 20s. And I went to the bathroom, I looked at myself in the mirror and I literally, I'll never forget this. And I was like, I don't really like what I'm seeing. And I knew I had to do something different. So that was the moment I decided I could choose how I wanted to show up. So even though I didn't really get the value of being unfinished till later in my life, I knew that I had some choices and I could choose how to show up. And I went on a journey to figure out how to do that.
So in your, thank you for telling those stories, because I'm sure a lot of listeners can go, oh yeah, I had that moment. In the first part of your book, then you're just helping people sort of, you're encouraging them to let go of this idea, because you learned that trying to be unfinished really caused suffering for you.
Trying to be finished. Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Caused. Right. Yes. It did. It
so
caused suffering.
Except, mm-hmm. Yeah. So accepting that, oh, I'm never really going to be finished, can be liberating.
Yes. It's freeing. It's really yeah. freeing to think about your life in that way. It takes a lot of pressure off, right? So That's kind of how I feel about that, right? It's freeing. You're correct.
Is there one thing in that first part of your book that stands out that maybe you would share about maybe a thought process or a try this to, you know, just so they get a taste of like what you're helping, how you're helping them do that in the first part of your book, just one little try this exercise or.
Yeah. So one thing I ask the readers to do in the book is think about the, you know, how they would describe like a word or a short phrase that would describe how they feel about being unfinished. And without really thinking about the positive aspects of that, they might actually think that's scary or that's, you know, it's on things are unclear, right? And we don't like to be unclear as humans. We like to have things figured out, right? So to think about that, and then just to get that out there so they understand how they feel, and then to think about the benefits of what unfinished might do for them, the possibilities it could open up. Because when we think that, you know, we have this expectation of ourselves or others put on us, right? It's very narrowing in what our possibilities are. So if we can think about unfinished as limitless possibilities, then what's a word or a phrase you might use to describe how you think about unfinished? So helping people think through that is something I recommend in that chapter.
And that's powerful because, well, in the language of depth psychology, you're really getting them to go a little bit deeper into, well, even if intellectually they're like, yeah, I'd like to accept my life as unfinished, but just because your intellect says you want to do something doesn't mean your body will actually let you do it. So by naming sort of the fear, you, like you said, put it on the table, they can work with it and they can have a dialogue with it.
Yeah, I think that is powerful. I think that is a powerful thing for people. And actually talking to you about this, like, makes me even think about that more. So I actually appreciate your lens around that too. Thank you for that.
Great. Okay. So that's section one. So once you accept that being finished is not only a myth, but believing the myth causes suffering, what's next? You have a whole section on the need to get out of your way now. I particularly love the image of the orange cones and barrels because of a construction site, because it's such a great metaphor for our lives, even on a daily basis. It's like you start out with this plan for the day, what you want to accomplish. And even before you get out the door, something goes awry. Of course, I like to think about these moments as tricks played on me by Hermes, the Greek god, who's known as a trickster, but also a guide of souls. So there's meaning to those orange cones and barrels. And also it helps me feel better to have a sense of humor about my life and not take myself too seriously. So tell us about when and how you realize you are standing in your own way and how you'll be helping your readers, you know, understand or become aware of how they might be standing in their own way. And then in that section, you sort of switch up their thinking about what are these obstacles and how do you navigate them? So that's a lot. Just take one thing at a time.
Yeah, it's a lot. And you can prompt me when I forget to talk about something. So I think, how did I realize I'm getting in my own way? I think I was an artist in my 20s, as you know, and I do talk about that in the book. And that artist is how I defined myself. So we have a ways of thinking about ourselves. And the artist me is like the true me. So I had this point in time when I was young and my husband said to me, you know, so are you ever going to go? Because I worked part-time and I had a studio and I had shows and, you know, I was like being the artist me, which I love. And it's just such at my core. And so he said, are you going to ever go get like a full-time job with a full-time paycheck? And I was like, oh God. And I thought, oh my God, how do I live not like an artist, right? So I identified myself as an artist, but one way we get in our own way, and I did, was identifying yourself as a thing, right? I'm a title. I'm living this life. I have this house. I have this car. I make this much money, whatever the case is. So, and, you know, if that job disappears or you can't be an artist at that moment, you have all these doubts about yourself, right? And so, and that's very narrowing. So we're, so you're really like minimizing your possibilities when you identify yourself in that small way or in that title. So I think that's one way I've gotten in my own way throughout my life, and climbing the ladder in corporate, and the title was important to me, and I liked the paycheck I made. And I finally got to a point where I just couldn't do it anymore because I couldn't bring my whole self to the table. And you know, when you feel like you're in a situation where you're trying to fit in and you don't, it's, you know, you don't feel good about yourself, right? You're questioning yourself all the time. So I think that's one of the ways I do that. Like, I love that when I was writing this book and I was writing the proposal, that that metaphor came to me around the orange barrels and the single lanes, because when we get in our way, we see those lanes, you know, when you're working in construction on the roads and they close off and they narrow you down to one lane, that's your life. So, and so I think it's a really great metaphor for life. When you open up the possibilities and you start chipping away at how you're getting in your own way, then you widen the highway of possibilities, right? So I think that is a pretty powerful, and in the book, there's a part where I do ask people to start writing down and naming their orange barrels. Yeah, so that they can think, because again, if you name your orange barrels, then you can start to chip away at them and figure out how to do that. So I think that answers one part of your question about how I've gotten in my own way. And that's an example in my lifetime.
No, you also went on to explain sort of in your book, how you're providing really hands-on activities and journaling prompts really to help people. Because sometimes we don't really know. We just feel frustrated. We're like, I can't get where I want to get, but I don't even know how I'm in my own way. So is there another sort of exercise that comes to the...
There's a lot of real... I think they're helpful, like, and they're small. They're not like big things to do. And everything in my book is something I've tried and I've experimented with. So for example, how many times do we say I should have? Every time you say, I should have done that, you're doubting yourself and your capabilities and your talents. You know, let's just move on and not question ourselves, right? So questioning yourself is a way of getting in your own way. So that's a really small activity where I just say, hey, put a tally mark, put it on your phone or on a post-it note or whatever, and see how many times you say that. You might surprise yourself. Another thing I would like the readers to think about is who's surrounding you? You know, like write down all their names, right? And then do they boost your energy or do they suck your energy or deplete you? Are they supportive and encouraging or do you feel less than around them, right? And then how can you take those people and lessen your time with them? Now, if it's your boss, it might be kind of hard, right? Then you have to make a choice if you have to make a change. But if it's people, you know, let's figure out a ways that you don't have to like spend as much time with them, but surround, and I always told my daughter, and I think we all have done this, right? Like surround yourself with people who lift you up, make you feel good, you know, and who are authentic about it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's those genuine people you can trust and their authenticity, and they have your best interest in mind. So those are a couple of just small try this activities in the book.
Well, and those are, they're small, but powerful, right? Because there's plenty of research, not that we need research, this is all kind of intuitive, but there's plenty of research about how your life starts to conform to the people around you. So you might, And this is really complex and tricky because we choose to be around certain people for unconscious reasons. We don't even know. We might think we're just drawn to this person, but that person might be feeding into our own self-doubt, as opposed to, because let's say you're not confident enough to hang out with somebody who's like, you know, a little further ahead than you are. But that's exactly what you need so that they can pull you up. So it's pretty tricky. That's a really powerful exercise to just take an inventory. And I like how you say spend less time because that's kind, because sometimes we do need to spend less time with people, but it's not because they're bad or we're bad or we're mean or anything. It just is the way that you have to be aware of like what energizes you and what doesn't energize you. There's no value judgment in that. So,
yeah. So how do we become aware? So I like your depth kind of lens around that because I'm not as deep around it as you are, but yeah, how do you become more aware and conscious that those things are happening? And until you do that, you can't really like shift, you know, what's happening in your life.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So then we've accepted my life is unfinished. And first reaction is, oh, darn it. Second reaction is, oh, this is really exciting. And then we've identified some ways we're getting in our own way and some exercises to go, oh yeah, I need to be around some different people. So there's some really specific things that they can do. So now, and now we can see more clearly. So the next section of your book shares what comes next, which is uncovering your natural talents. You call them superpowers. And another part of surrendering to being unfinished is shifting your expectations about the rest of the world. And that's probably one of the hardest things to do because it's easy to blame our circumstances. And we're used to in our society looking outside for the answer, for the solution, the food that tastes good, the whatever. And this only deflects us. It actually tricks us into thinking that the outside world has more power over us than we actually do. So tell us more about this unleashing part. And then, you know, I'll remind you, but I think the framework of the 10 small but mighty, or just that whole concept, is a great tool that people can just really absorb even tomorrow after listening to this. And then we just want to give them enough of a taste so they get on your email list and they buy your book. So the whole third section, unleashing, the super, whatever, wherever you want to go.
First of all, I did a little research about the term superpower. So I call it the superpower principle. And I kind of broke down super and power. And super is like intensified. So super is like you intensified. And I love that, right?
I like
so,
that.
Yeah. So if you're your true self, it's you are intensified, right? And you shine. And then power is like the fuel that gets you somewhere, right? So that power is how you feel. Do you feel energized, right? Or are you where you should be, living your desires and your passions and understanding who you are? Do you have the strong sense of self, what's important to you, what your values are? And then if you have both of those things, that combination, it's your superpowers. You'll shine. Like there's no way you can't shine, right?
And you'll feel on fire.
And you'll feel on fire. Right? It's it's this thing that they say, kind of like they're in the flow, right? Like there is no time. The hours pass, right? Because you're doing this, and I won't even call it work, but you're doing what drives you naturally. And that's kind of where I want the readers to get to. It's tough to get there, but you got to do some work around that. And then you mentioned this thing about the external world. And we set expectations on ourselves. People set expectations on us. You work for companies and you feel like the only way to grow is to grow up the ladder, right? And so, or we live in neighborhoods where people have BMWs a lot of people don't, but there's always something around us that we're comparing ourselves to. So the goal in shifting, and initially I wanted to call the chapter lowering your expectations, but I got some feedback around that can be kind of a negative, but I think it is really kind of lowering your expectations about where you think you should be in life, and really internalizing and letting that drive you where you are. Yeah, the external world is kind of scary. And so when we have, and then we never feel satisfied. So, right? We never feel satisfied.
Yes. And also what I was going to say is sometimes growth comes from regression. And it's regression doesn't mean going backwards. It means taking a moment and going, inward and in depth to pull something up that you need in order to take your next step forward.
Yeah, exactly. And then you talked about the small but mighty. I love that. I love the concept of the small but mighty, because I think, you know, we've heard it's a lot about the little things in life, right? But yet we overlook the little things every day, right? Mm-hmm. We are focused on our next goal, our next house, our next, like these big things in life, right? And a lot of us work in companies where we identify ourselves with a project that we're working on, right? And so that project is our identity, right? But that's big. That's a big thing, right? And then a new CEO comes in and changes all the strategies, and that project stops. And then you're like, I can never get anything done. I can never, right? And so my point in sharing that is that the small but mighty are the little tiny things that happen every day that get you to where you are. So little tiny things about how did you be your true self today? Who did you lessen your time with today? Who sucks your energy, right? Or doesn't lift you up? When I graduated with my master's in fine arts, I went to the graduation ceremony and I was like, oh, okay, so what now? I have my MFA. Like, I belittled, right? Like, I was like, okay, so what? But if you think about it, all the blood, sweat, and tears, and perseverance, and diligence, and all of the work, and the moments, and the coaching, and the criticisms, and all that stuff that got me to that place was I didn't like honor that in myself. So that's what I mean by like the small, but my, all those little things. So we don't pay attention to that stuff like we pay attention to the big stuff. And so the big stuff is just an ending, but most of your life is spent in the between stage. So it's kind of like honoring the between, the in-between, in between the start and finish.
And you just give like 10, you know, examples in your book of like how you can do this, how you can shift, because, you know, there's this spiritual saying that where your attention goes, that's where your life goes. So if your attention is, exactly, I never get anything done, then you probably never feel like you get anything done. But if it's like, oh, today I was authentic, especially authentic during this moment, you automatically are likely to do that again or make that happen when you recognize it.
Yeah. It's creating a habit around that, right? We can't expect. So here's the other thing in the book is like, you know, we might try meditation or we might try this. And I talk about all these things in here, but I would never admit that I'm consistent in anything. So I might journal one day and maybe I won't do it for a month. I might meditate 2 days this week and maybe not for another 3 weeks, right? Like, don't put all that pressure on yourself. You do what you can and feel good about that little step that you did, right? So if I did 3 minutes of meditation, I'm like, I did 3 minutes of meditation today, right? So shifting that sort of way of thinking about your life.
I also think that, let's say you don't journal every day, but you journal here and there, but you also meditate here and there. You also do some, like, then the more that you recognize what you did in each day, you'll see a theme, and you'll see if the larger theme is it's about being present and mindful, but I'm not doing one thing, the same thing every day, but yet every day I'm doing something that can shift how you feel about that too.
It matters. All that stuff matters, right? And so I like the way you said that everything you do every day matters, and trying to be in the present it's hard. You know, because there's a lot of stuff going. One thing I try to do every day, and I just learned this recently, I don't even know if I wrote my book about this, but I was meditating one day, and I think it was Deepak Chopra, and he said, no anticipation and no resistance. No resistance, no anticipation. So every day I actually like try to remember no resistance, no anticipation, and just receive the, you know, people don't like some piece of work I did. Okay, I'm just going to receive it and learn from that. Mm-hmm. So tough to do, but that's really helped me just thinking like that.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so I love your concluding section. Be messy, be you. Thanks for that permission. And I just want to talk a little bit about how I relate to this and just sort of why I wanted to have this conversation. because my thing is perfectionism, or self-consciousness and perfectionism. And, you know, one thing that kind of bothers me is that there are all these terms out there that don't have one meaning, and people will hear, oh, that sounds right. I've got an inner judge, and it might not even be a judge. It might be a lawyer, inner lawyer. And some people are like, well, I need to reparent myself. Well, what the heck does that even mean? So, you know, people throw out the term perfectionism. It's not as straightforward as people think. So, and it has many root causes. So this is what I was thinking about. And again, with all complexes, which are just patterns of reacting and thinking and behaving and responding and approaching the world, they all served a purpose until they didn't. So when we recognize that a pattern or a way of thinking is an obstacle now, it's not something to feel bad about because it served a purpose up until then. It helped you get to where you were. So it's more like moving on from a friendship that doesn't feel fulfilling anymore and forcing ourselves to devote energy to something that doesn't feel good is not good for either party, and no one's the bad guy. So for example, your self-doubt then isn't the bad guy. It's not something you want to hide in a closet. My perfectionism has to do with the fact that my experience of our mother was that my behavior was what she internalized. It was like a mirror back to her of whether she was a better parent than her mother or not. So every time I misbehaved, it made her feel like she was doing something wrong. So therefore, I had to be perfect. So that's sort of the original kind of wound. But perfectionism served me very well. It served me well, and it made me intensely good at certain things. So it took a while, but this is just like a little personal, but you know, the weekend before our mom passed away, I had asked her about how she felt when she got accidentally pregnant with me, right? She wasn't married. She was 19. She ended up marrying our dad and then later getting divorced. And I had done this past life regression active imagination exercise. So for my listeners, you don't have to believe in past lives. It's just using your imagination to just see where your imagination goes. And I identified the suffocating feeling by her, you know, her projecting this burden onto me. And so it was kind of mind blowing, but what was beautiful is that, you know, we had this tension in our relationship, and we didn't know she was going to pass away in the next couple of days. But when I asked her, like, well, how did you feel when you got pregnant with me? And she was like, I just knew I had to be a better mother than my mother. Mm. And I was like, holy crap. Yes, that's what I just figured out. And I said, you know, Mom, I felt that burden. And her response was so funny. It was like an affirmation, finally, after all these years of how I had suffered. And she said, well, that's what Dr. Phil would say. And we laughed because we're like, yes, that was her way of saying, I get it. Like, I get it. And so, you know, anyway, my perfectionism is complex to say the least, and your self-doubt is complex, and whatever other people are suffering with it's not a bad guy. It's a pattern that got you where you're at. And so, you know, the more that you build a relationship with you, you really start to see it as a companion, because it's not really ever going to go away. So for you, it's self-doubt, but now it's like a gift. Well, you're writing a book, right? It's an invitation to go deeper, to find your superpowers, which are communicating some ideas to other people. So, you know, the treasure is in the wound, is in the trauma. So anyway, I just wanted to share that because we're sisters talking about it.
It is really funny though, because even when you, you said in the beginning of this conversation, what prompted you to do this was our conversation, like just recently, where, you know, I've always been resisting and fighting my self-doubt. And then I had this realization that I just have it. It's deep and it's been there a long time, and there's reasons for it. And like you said, serve my purpose. And I just need to accept that about myself, have some humor, you know, about myself, and not resist that so much. So, you know, we resist a lot of moments in our life. And so,
well, right.
Yeah.
And what's, What's the other spiritual law is what you resist persists.
Yeah.
So yeah, now it's like, now it's like, mm-hmm. come here, honey, come here, self-doubt, yeah. come here. Will you sit down? Let's have a dialogue. Like, what are you trying to say to me right now?
Yeah.
So it's this invitation.
Yeah. So, yes. But anyway, I've only had that. I think we both like, we're like, oh my God, that's true. Let's just, you know, it's there. It's what it is. And that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. For me, it actually wasn't about perfectionism. That's only one of my complexes. Yeah. The other one is self-consciousness. And of course, people would not think I'm self-conscious. I am intensely self-conscious, but it doesn't stop me from doing things. But my self-consciousness is never going to go away. So back to you. Talk about how you finish the story in your book that embracing your life is unfinished means you have to, speaking of perfectionism, you have to give yourself permission to give up on being perfect and being messy. So we kind of were talking about it, but you talk about it in, you know, as you talk about it in the book and how you relate to that, and then just sort of how that's playing out in your life right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people have this perfectionism complex, right? So I hear these little things through my life that I think are like really cool. And one of the things I heard in the last, you know, handful of years was, practice does not make perfect. It makes progress. So as much as you try to be perfect, you're never going to be perfect because nobody is perfect. And who wants to be perfect? Because when you become perfect, you're done, right? And what's the fun in that? And so that's like my continuous thing. Like, you can be done when you're dead. I mean, that sounds kind of morbid, but it's true, right? Like people are going to, I never thought I'd be in this place in my life where I'm talking about retirement, but retirement doesn't mean I'm done. I'm like, what? Oh my God, my life, I have so many possibilities. Like I never thought that, right? Like people are like, I'm done. I identified myself in this title, in this company, doing this work all these years, but that is not you, right? Like you, the thing that you can be certain about in your life amongst all the ambiguity is you. Right. So you are there all the time. You, if you know who you are and you let that drive you, that is your like rock in this life, I think. So I forgot your question. I don't even know if I answered the question.
No, that's perfect. It's just that, and then the other thing is messy.
Oh yeah. So be messy, right? Like, okay. So for instance, there was this book by Eckhart Tolle, that was called Power of Now. It was on my bookshelf, like, I don't know, 10 years ago when it came out. And I picked it up and I started reading. I'm like, oh my God, I can't even relate to what this is. I put it back on my shelf. There's some reason, like I purge books every once in a while, but there's some reason I've hung on to this book, right? So I, like 10 years later, I pick it up, I start reading. I'm like, oh my God, this book is so awesome, right? Like I got it. I was there. It was the moment. Right. And so what I mean by like be messy is it's okay. Right. Like you gave me an inscripted book, of the 7 spiritual laws of, success by Deepak Chopra. I picked it up. I didn't read it when you gave it to me and I picked it up not too long ago. I was like, oh my God, this is so great. Right. So people may pick up my book and may be like, and I write about this in my book, and they might be like, oh no, you know what I mean? But you pick it up, that's something. You might put it down, maybe 5 years you pick it up, or maybe you go through and you're like, that exercise is not for me. That one's for me. That feels too hard. Do the ones that you're like, you have some energy, right? So that's the messiness of life, right? Like,
well, yes. And I would, in depth psychology speak, I say that's the realm of the feminine. So, you know, the masculine oriented way of life is achievement oriented. It's linear. You know, in order to achieve in corporate America, I have to do this, and then this plus this equals this. And there's a sort of linear path, and you have to, you know, it's just all very kind of rigid. And the realm of the feminine is meandering. And it's actually like, you know, my book is about teaching how your unconscious is luring you. So there's something that made you keep the book, and there is something that made you pick up the book. And that's your unconscious prompting you, and you followed it.
Yes. And so you can like work in your corporate job or do this job, and you know, maybe you can't quit it right now because it's you're dependent on it or whatever the case is, but you can do that and you can meander, right? Like, so that's kind of the messiness too, right? Like, it doesn't mean you have to quit that or not do that, and you can't do that. It's not one or the other.
Right. And which I got from you. And also, if you can find a way to be more fluid and and you know, express the feminine, and maybe it's you playing a band on the weekend or whatever it is, then you will find that when you go back to your day job, you don't suffer as much because at least you're expressing the thing that you were,
Yeah, exactly right. So the book is really about, you know, it's really about how people can be who they are and how powerful that is if you make the time to spend the time with yourself. So maybe you spend less time with that person who's like dragging you down, and you spend a little bit more time with yourself and give yourself permission to do that. So you can, you know what things are that naturally drive you and align some things to that in your life too.
And also, I find that one thing that people resist that is just really sad is that you may not be in the right place. And so you think, oh, I need to figure this out. Like, why doesn't my boss like me? Or why? And instead of digging down and trying to be even less of you in order to conform, you might be faced with a decision that. And so I feel like people feel like they're the loser if they can't like fit into a certain sort of work culture, when really the message to you is this isn't your place.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I've had so many experiences like that. I mean, I know you're probably talking about me right now, right? Like, I've had so many experiences like that in my life. And finally I was like, duh, I just don't fit here. Right. Like, I wouldn't trade all those experiences because they were so like, so much growth, you know, personal growth. But you know, this one time when I wasn't expecting it and my position in the recession was eliminated, right? And I was like trying to figure out like the last, you know, year why my new boss, like I didn't have any opportunities, and other people are like, oh my God, I can't believe the way she talks to you. And, but I like, and then I was like, okay, so I started putting my resume together because I was like, okay, I can't work in this anymore. I have no girl. She doesn't like me clearly. Which is fine. That's okay. You don't have to like, you know, everybody. But when they limited my job and I got in the car and I like felt this relief, like this huge weight off my shoulders, right? It was like, thank you, universe, right? Like I started making the decision because I was putting my resume together, but the decision was made for me. And it was a recession. It was an easy time, but I couldn't be there anymore. And so, you know, so shifting our thoughts around some of those experiences too, I think is really helpful. Yeah.
So one of the reasons I wanted to have, so we've gone through the book. I love the way it's laid out. Three is always good. Three things to pay attention to. And then you just wrap it up so nicely. But one of the reasons I wanted to have you on before your book is published, and I'll have you back, is to get my listeners who this is really resonating for to get on your book launch team. And I know that this conversation has resonated with a lot of people, and people always appreciate like just personal stories and vulnerability and awkwardness. So tell my audience what it means to be a member of your launch team, and what do they get, and what are you asking of them? So we'll start there. People who might want to, and actually I will say that I have been on three launch teams. It's an amazing experience to be, it's an honor actually to be asked to be on an author's launch team. So
go ahead. I love that you say that because you think like you're burdening people by asking them that, but they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so honored that you asked me. And I'm like, wow, I'm so honored that you want to be part of it. So the launch team, and my book launch team, is called Unfinished Friends. because I think a lot of us can connect this way. Like we get it. We get that we're unfinished. So unfinished friends. And the goal is that the people on the launch team can, well, the goal of the book, right, is to be able to help people. Like that's the ultimate goal. And to be able to do that, it's important that you have a network of people who believe in what you're doing, who can help you get the message out about your book, right? Because we need our networks to help spread the word about these things. So the book launch team are a group of people who are believe in the messaging. They, you know, will review a copy of the book previously, purchase a copy, review the copy of the book, even if you don't read it fully, you know, get an idea of the book, write a review, which is really helpful in getting it to get more. And you're more the expert in this than I am now. So this is my first time around and learning about this, and then share it with their network. So the goal is that we get it out and people can really try some of the things. They can position themselves better in life. And by the way, and I write this a little bit about this in my book too, like the ripple effects of you being you on the world is powerful. It's like our world needs people to be them. We need every single person to be their true selves and authentic selves and show up and bring their gifts to the world. That is really the ultimate benefit of all of this, right? And our world will be a better place because of that. So I can't even explain. It gives me the shivers to even talk about that because it's big. It's like big, but that's not why I want everybody to do it. That's kind of the side effect of it, right? I want people to feel great about who they are. So that's sort of the essence of the launch team. Yep.
And then you'll, when they sign up to be part of the launch team, you'll be providing instructions for them and
a
template and links that all they have to do is copy and share. They won't have to, it won't really be work. It'll be like, here, take this. If you want to personalize it, put it there. So let's tell people then how they can become a member of the launch team is by going to your website, which is just a website for your book and you as an author, and they can subscribe to your email list. So what is your website?
My website is under construction right now. So I think the best way now might be my email address, which is Chris, C-H-R-I-S dot Schindler, S-C-H-I-N-D-L-E-R, the number 8, at gmail.com. My web address, even though it's under construction, is Chris Schindler Author. com. This is kind of fun too, because right now with the launch team, like I'm working on a launch date, but being on the launch team is sending updates. People are voting on my covers, the book cover, and providing updates about where we are in the process and, you know, provides other information. So it's actually kind of good. People are enjoying being part of that journey right now. And I'll, through that, we'll communicate the actual launch date too.
Okay. So also you can go into Facebook and search for Unfinished Friends and you'll find Chris's Facebook page. And then, I mean, also they can learn more about you on LinkedIn. You have a LinkedIn profile. So, okay, great. So I will put all that in the description box. And is there like anything else that we didn't cover that you want to cover? Or
you've done a really good job prompting some thoughts and questions, and I really appreciate it. You made it very easy for me to come on and talk about this, which I am truly grateful for, Deb.
Yeah, you're a natural. You're a natural. I'm jealous, actually, because I'm not as casual. I have to like prepare. I'm a perfectionist.
Thank you to everybody for listening. And thank you in advance for anybody who wants to be part of the launching process. Appreciate it.
And if you're wondering about the painting over Chris's shoulder, maybe you just want to say, like, I love your answer. Like, why?
It's so funny because this is my office space for work, and people ask that cat, what's is that a pig? And what's up with the pig back there? This pig just spoke to me, and it was part of a silent auction. And it's not often like you have real artwork that's kind of affordable to buy. And so
yes.
It just spoke to me, and it's a real painting that somebody locally did. And it, I'm sure there's something from a deeper lens that you could help uncover for me, Deb.
Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. But I really like it. It's very authentic.
Well,
yeah.
Okay. Can I just tell you, just off the cuff, I think pigs are misunderstood.
Oh, wow. Okay. See, you could do that. I am like a misfit who always feels misunderstood. So yeah.
Right?
So
yes,
that makes a lot of sense. I like it. See, this is the deeper part that you can always bring out. And I love that. How fun.
Well, I can get a little carried away, but it's fun for me. So, okay. So this has been great. And I'm thinking we will definitely chat again after your book is published. So then we'll go take it out there and sell it. And I'd also love to hear from all of you about whether you want to hear from the Lukovich sisters again about any topic. And we could talk about parental complexes or whatever.
Oh my gosh, we could talk about so much.
And maybe we should bring on the third member of our sister trio, Michelle. So let me know what you think. And anyway, Chris, thanks for sharing your story and putting your experience into a framework that others can use to embrace being unfinished and learn how to get out of their own way and uncover their superpowers and allow the real you to come out. So thank you.
Thank you, Deb. This has been fun.
I hope you enjoyed my first sister podcast episode, and remember to go to, now we need to confirm the website, but Christine Schindler
author.com.
I'll get it right in the description box, or
okay,
just Google her. She's going to come up. So until next time. I'm your host, Deborah Lukovich, and you are listening to Dose of Depth podcast. To get updates on new episodes, my writing, and how I teach my clients to get to know that deeper part of themselves, go to DeborahLukovich.com. Oh, and if you're not ready for a coach, learn what my clients know in my book, Your Soul is Talking. Are you listening? 5 Steps to Uncovering Your Hidden Purpose. You can check it out on my website or get it on Amazon.